Buongiorno, Andrea.
Bonjour.
We are coming to you from undisclosed location.
In the east or in the west?
Or in the south.
Or so far west that it's east?
It could be any of those things. Okay, well, welcome back to the Disentanglement Podcast, where we pretend to be spies and fail magnificently. Today we're talking about our second steps in de-Googling. Quite some time ago, we talked about first steps in de-Googling and the idea of extracting myself from my free Gmail account, which I've had since at least 2007, was so overwhelming that we've done a lot of other things rather than tackle that. But we have progress to report.
Yeah, it actually isn't as hard as it seems to be, although there's obviously some kind of psychological imprinting on the email address as a sort of identity. So it's more difficult, I think, psychologically than it is technically.
Right. Well, I think one of the things you told me is that Gmail never recycles email addresses. So I'm, in the sense, always going to have this account, yeah. And it makes sense to have access to it.
Yeah, and you should always, you shouldn't actually shut down a Gmail account. I mean, they will shut it down, but it's good to have it present and just have it forward to something.
Right. Well, we'll get to that. So, right. Okay. Well, the first thing that needed to happen was to figure out what the new host, server, name, etc. was going to be. And you were the one who took the important initiative there. So tell everybody what you did.
Well, I've been dithering for a long time. In fact, I've experimented with a number of the private email alternatives, starting with Tutanota, which I really like their service.
Now Tuta. T-U-T-A.
I think they're really respectful, and their company mission is clearly privacy respecting. That really is their goal and raison d'être. So I really like them. But I also tried another one that had been recommended on privacyguides.org, and that is a fairly reputable source called Skiff. And I like that one as well. It also has a drive function, or had a drive function with some documents and other things too. But they were recently bought by Notion, which is a notes, task management, kind of aiming to be a evolution of the G Suite alternative for the designer and tech crowd kind of thing. So they were bought up. So they no longer exist, or they won't exist as of the summer. So that was out. But then about, I don't know, 6 months ago, or maybe even as much as a year ago, Proton put out a family plan. And since we are a family, that was intriguing.
And I should mention again that
disentanglementpodcast at
protonmail.com is, as I think, still the name of our podcast email address, which reminds me, I should probably check it more than every other year.
Yes.
Yes.
Probably.
Okay. Anyway, so we have some familiarity with Proton Mail.
Yeah, I've been using Proton Mail for my just a free trial account for my calendar, which I wanted to get off of the Google and Apple servers. So that's I like having it so I can easily sync between devices. I have not yet set up my own server infrastructure, and just wanted to try something that was a little more user friendly. And Proton is pretty good at that. It's yeah, so I've been using that for a long time. And finally, they came out with this family plan, which allows you up to 6 people for $20 a month. So it's steep, but as soon as you get more than 2 people, it actually works out pretty well for a number of reasons. One is you get 3 gigabytes of cloud storage included in that. So that's shared among up to 6 people, so 3 terabytes. Of cloud storage, not 3 gigabytes. So that's shareable on, among 6 people. You can divide it up however you want. You also get included is a subscription to Simple Login, which we were actually paying for before. So everybody gets their own Simple Login account. Mm. They also included in it is their password manager if you choose to use that. We're already using a different service, and probably will for this foreseeable future, but that is also included. You also get access to their VPN network, which is very reliable and very privacy respecting. It's a top rated VPN, calendar and contacts as well. So it's a pretty robust suite, and with what's included with the drive and the VPN, and the capacitor manager, plus the ability to run your own, have your own domain name. I think it's a pretty good, it's a pretty good deal, especially when you get more than a couple of people.
Well, no, actually, I think more to the point is, unless we'd been trained on free software for these things without knowing that they were extracting so much information for us, that would seem like a steal. It would seem like a fantastically good deal.
Yeah, so I did. I put together a spreadsheet and did some comparisons, and it really does. Even as far as value, it does come out. If you're going to be getting a VPN, if you're going to be buying cloud storage, if you're going to have a password manager, even for two people, it actually is a deal. And with three or more, it ends up being quite a good one. And you can also include anybody you want, and that family is really anybody you want. It's not they don't have to be in your family; they can be anybody.
Right. So we have each set up an account for ourselves. We're gonna have one for our son when he heads out of the house soon, graduating from high school, and mom and dad-in-law. You know,
yes,
if you're interested, because we know that you're among the 9 listeners of the podcast.
Yeah. So
I'm kidding. We're up to 17.
What this would give us too is, if you're all in the ProtonMail ecosystem, then your email messages and calendars and everything is end to end encrypted between members. Actually, between anybody on ProtonMail,
right?
But especially when you're in a family group, then you can share, and you can share a family email domain name too,
right,
which might be of interest to people.
Right. We actually talked in some episode a while back about what's the point of having end-to-end encrypted email if you're writing to people who don't have it.
Right.
And we decided it was worth it anyway, just to set the precedent and to encourage others that way, and just to get out of Google's free entangling products. And you, as you mentioned, with this package, you can have your own domain name. So we're not going to tell you, but we did choose, after a great deal of deliberation, as I recall, we finally decided on our domain name, which was distinctive and yet generic, which is what every trademark aspires to be, I think.
Right. Yeah. Right, exactly. So it just looks like a generic kind of company name, somewhat techie and sounding, that we can all have our own email address at that domain. So it's like we work for that company, you know, and it's our domain name. But it routes through the ProtonMail server. It's possible for those who are do-it-yourselfers to set up your own email server, and we all know about that from Hillary Clinton days. however...
That's not how I know about that.
However, I am told by very good sources that that is a very difficult thing to do well. And just trust this one to the experts. And ProtonMail, among the alternative providers, is emerging as the big one. They have over 100 million or 200 million people who use it. And so it's a big network. And they're also
unlikely to go out of business.
Unlikely. That's the problem. An example of these new companies going out of business would be Skiff. You know, they were around for a couple of years, and then they were bought out. Probably was a good deal for them, and one can expect that from new companies. So anyway, they seem to be in it for the long haul.
Right. So that brought me to the point of actually having to take some action. So here's what I did. The first is, we have mentioned before, an app called Thunderbird that you can get from any app store. And what it does is basically you can authorize it to download to your computer or to a server, a cloud server, all of your email and all of your archives on Gmail.
Right. So for example, if you're using a Windows computer, Outlook will do this. The Outlook program.
Right.
And if you're on a Mac, the Mac Mail program, or Apple Mail program, will do this. So you sign in with it, and it will mirror your online account or download everything, whatever way you choose. So there's nothing particularly special about Thunderbird in that way. That Outlook or Apple Mail will do the same thing. But Thunderbird is an open source project. We have reason to believe that they're not tracking you so much, and this is really just to create an archive. So what have you done with Thunderbird?
Well, I downloaded all of my archived messages in Gmail and discovered, okay, this is just what I had archived. These were the number of messages I thought important to archive. The number is over 28,500.
Okay.
That made me think, I need to reconsider what is archive worthy. I mean, well, it's one of the things that happens with digital space and digital storage, because the cost is essentially zero.
Right.
There's no incentive to get rid of stuff. On the other hand, that's absurd. That those are just the emails I've saved. How many emails have I already written in my life? I mean, it's I don't know. Could it be over a million by now? I don't actually know. It's kind of disturbing.
Yeah, I suppose.
And this is just on the Gmail account since I've had since 2007. Isn't any other email account I've ever had.
I have to say, you are quite fastidious in deleting things compared to...
I'm a big deleter, yeah.
Compared to almost everybody else that I know, many of whom... When you look at their inbox, they have thousands of mails in their inbox.
Oh, I am an inbox zero girl,
yeah.
All the way.
Yeah, I am as well, and I've been for a long time, and I always unsubscribe from various things. However, even in that case, you end up with tens of thousands of emails. And the question is going to be, is it worth it to go through all of those and delete them or not?
No.
And obviously, no. Probably for most of you not, storage is really cheap. They probably take up, 10 gigabytes or something. And almost all of that is likely to be images of one way or another. And
right.
There's ways of searching and deleting the images if you want to do that.
Right.
But it's probably not worth it for almost anybody to do that anymore.
I'm not sure it was even really necessary to do this because, like I said, I'm not going to close out my account or lose
right.
access to it. But it just made, if I'm going to switch over to something else,
right.
I wanted to have some non-Gmail way of looking at the archive if I should ever need to, track somebody down in some
way. So
I
think one thing that Michael Bazell suggests in Extreme Privacy is, in fact, to... eventually just clear out your Gmail account so that there's nothing sitting there.
Right.
Now, Gmail or Google has very good security. It's unlikely that anybody outside of Google is going to have access to that, except government agencies if they have a subpoena.
Yeah, I'm just not worried about it. There's nothing in it currently that's going to be an issue.
Nonetheless, eventually
yeah.
we'll probably want to delete all of the ones on their servers. Now, and it will
yeah.
continue forwarding to the new email account afterwards. But
right.
it's nice to have an archive of that anyway.
Right. So, yeah, but what I haven't done is set up forwarding because
right.
one of the things I wanted to do is to rethink how I use email. We're sort of Cal Newport fans here and Andre more than I am, but he had a book called The World Without Email, which sounded like a description of utopia or heaven. And I, again, do not suffer anywhere near what a lot of working people do with emails. But I thought I didn't just want to start forwarding everything that's ever come to my old
right.
Gmail account. I wanted to be a little more deliberate. So I think with this one, I want this one to be personal contacts rather than business or life admin. At least to begin with.
Right.
So I have a work-based email that is specific with my employment. I do all my stuff there. I found that to be, at first I thought it was burdensome to have an extra email account, but it's turned out to be really useful to box it there. And then I have my paid Gmail account, which I'm going to leave in place for now because that has to do with my freelance business. And because it's paid, I know that the privacy is better as well as having Google's excellent security. So at this point, I didn't want to mess with that.
Yeah.
I just
Little
really
steps.
Wanted...
step at a time.
Well, I really wanted to rethink how I use email just for contacting and connecting
right.
with people and then to figure out how to do life admin a little bit differently. So one thing that's kind of cool about this Proton mail setup, I'm sure it's in other programs as well, is that you can create different aliases or different even email addresses. So I talked a while back on Antuda, what was originally Tuna Nona, now Tuda. I set up an email address and an email account that was purely for newsletter subscriptions. And I used a simple login, different name for each of them so that each subscription was tied only to that newsletter. So I decided to delete that. I actually completely deleted my Tuda account, so it no longer exists.
You did?
Yeah. Well, because I realized I was down to... It was actually a useful exercise because it made me realize most of the newsletters I wasn't actually interested in. And so it helped me figure out which ones I did actually want to read.
Right.
And so then you showed me how to set up an alias or a secondary email address with this new Proton account that is just subscriptions at
right.
our domain name. And so now I'm subscribing for the time being because I know that I want these exactly.
Right.
I'm not worried about using aliases or them, selling my email address or anything. And the emails that come to that email address go specifically into a folder marked newsletters. And so I can just read those there when I'm
right.
ready for them. So that, I think, to me, represents a good step towards siloing aspects of your email life, so it isn't just this overwhelming flood of disparate things from being bugged by your medical provider to pay your bill and a Substack newsletter on some serious cultural, intellectual topic, and then like photos from the family reunion. I mean, those are just that's part of the context shifting problem right. that computer work represents. So siloing those out seems to be a step in the right direction.
ProtonMail actually allows you, first of all, you could continue to do that with simple login. Transfer those over with the new account, the simple login.
Right.
One of the things that you would be able to do now, though, is to, within ProtonMail, you can create on-the-fly email addresses. They have their own. They actually bought simple login. That's why it's right. included. So they've integrated simple login into ProtonMail. So you can spin up your own email address through ProtonMail, and you can use that for your newsletters too, and it would function in the same way.
Right.
So that way, the only possible advantage of that is that if you're using the same email, then it would be possible for them to figure out what this person is subscribed to all these different emails, or if that one of the advantages too of the simple login email address is that you can turn them off. You can just sort of, if you need to, in the future.
Right. I might do that, but I decided to do it differently with these just because I'd been getting them long enough to know that I wanted them.
So this is like the keepers.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Right. And then also because Proton has a calendar and a drive, I transferred all of my future events that are on my Google Calendar over to Proton Calendar. I decided I wasn't going to try to go back and delete all them because, again, it's already been transparent this long. It doesn't really matter. But I'm not going to use Google Calendar anymore going forward. Same thing with my free Gmail accounts drive. Downloaded everything from Google, uploaded it to Proton Drive, and cleared out the Google Drive. So I'm going to stop using that. So I've extracted myself entirely from those two things, at least.
Right.
And the last thing I did was this isn't as related directly to the email, but you suggested using the Brave browser instead of Chrome. And when you open it, it's very easy. It offers to import your bookmarks from whatever browser you've been using. So I just imported everything that I was using in Chrome. I haven't yet at Firefox. I still will probably use. I kind of like having two different browsers again. I know you said one nice thing about Brave browsers, it lets you have different profiles. So again, you can be specific to context. I may do that eventually, but I like Firefox better. I wanted to stop using Chrome as another non-Google.
There's no reason to stop using Firefox. Firefox is recommended in many cases. I do like Brave for that compartmentalization feature. You can simply create another profile for a different realm.
Yeah, so
of
say
your life.
You told me you had a bunch of different profiles.
Yeah, so for example, I have a profile that I use for like financial stuff. So one of the reasons I started doing this is I use a lot of plugins for my research. Mm-hmm. About translating and grammar correction and all kinds of plugins. And those, you give them very high level of permissions. They can basically see everything on the web page. Mm. And I didn't want to have those plugins on when I'm doing my banking because they can see everything that you're doing, theoretically.
Right.
So I created a separate profile that's just for, like, know your customer banking pages so that like just all of our financial institutions, they're siloed in there. And also I can keep the session cookies so it's not always asking for your two-factor authentication, for example.
Right.
And I can create another one for, as noted, we do not live in our country of origin. So we have different Amazon accounts at different places. So I can create a profile that for one location and for another location, which I can attach to a VPN server in a different location as well. So those things can be useful.
Right. And is it, you said Brave is built on the Android engine like Chrome is, but it's not.
It's the Chromium engine. It's the same thing underneath. It's just been de-Googled.
De-Googled, right.
Just like Graphene OS is de-Googled Android.
Right. That's your annoying smartphone, which is less annoying than it was before.
Right. So anyway, I do use Firefox as well. I think I'd like to support the Firefox project, and I want there to be another option other than Chrome.
Yeah, or even Brave. I think, having... Actually, I understand better how to silo or like how to use compartmentalization the right way rather than the wrong way. It's useful to have different email accounts, even different programs, different browsers that you use.
Right.
We thought at some point we might even like have different phones for different purposes. Like I would sort of like this is practically the way it is now, but I was just thinking it would be nice to have a phone that the closest people in our lives could always reach us on.
Right.
That used to be a landline because of our international life that is less helpful. In fact, I think the landline has rung all of like 2 times in the past 6 months.
Yeah.
Not complaining. But anyway, but to have that be separate from the phone that, you know, I carry around with me, that I listen to podcasts on, that I, you know, navigate with.
Eventually what we'll set up with, and this is something Michael Bazell talks about in his books, we'll get VoIP VoIP numbers that will handle all of that stuff. So we will not. And there you can segregate it.
We probably need to talk about that sometimes, though, because there are a lot of companies that do not like VoIP numbers.
Well, there are ways. For your two-factor authentication purposes, there's very particular procedures you need to use. However, that's actually one thing you talked about, different mobile phones. One thing also I like about Graphene OS is that you can, just like with the Chrome browser, you can set up different profiles, or with a Brave browser, you can set up different profiles. With a Graphene OS, you can set up to 30 different profiles.
Mm-hmm.
So each of those profiles has its own sandboxed environment.
Mm-hmm.
And when you shut it off, it's off. Basically, it's not live until you go into it. So for example, I have work. I don't hardly ever do work on my phone, but we were traveling a couple of weeks ago and I needed to do some work things. And I didn't, for my work, it's a paid for Google account. I didn't want to sign into that on my main page, so I can create a profile for work, and so that work can be segregated on that, with that profile.
Right. So I think the takeaway for the listeners out there is that I think the first thing that needs to be done is to think about the right way to compartmentalize your email life. That is kind of the first set of decisions you need to make before you go into actually setting something up. But I think having had time to ponder that and have some experience of it and how to use it well, that made it, when it finally came down to it, it actually was not that technically difficult. I'm not nearly as technically proficient as Andrea over there from Italia, or not. So I'm still thinking through exactly how I want to use this new one. Like I said, I want it to be mostly personal. But anyway, though we have get no paid endorsements for what we do here. But Proton Mail, the whole Proton suite, seems to be a pretty good alternative. The cost is reasonable, but it does make sense to me to pay for things like this. And so that's where I suggest you can use Thunderbird to download and backup free Gmail accounts if you have them. And then check out the Brave browser if you're looking for for an alternative browser.
Yeah, and then you can just set up forwarding on your Gmail account if you want to. Proton makes it very easy to simply import your entire account into Proton Mail. It's just a few steps and they'll do it all. And then you can just set up forwarding and then it's empty and there's nothing more there. And that would be a very simple way. I mean, if you have the Android phone and you've got all the photos and you've got one of the 59 different Google products thing there, if you have, before you do that, don't shut down your Google account, but if you can want to delete it. But that's further on. We won't bother you with that. That's very a deep rabbit hole.
Okay. And this time I wrote down the listener suggested motto, so I'm going to sign off properly. So this has been the Disentanglement Podcast, helping you to reclaim your digital life one bite with a Y at a time.